Shri Krishna Janmashtami Mahotsava ki. Shri Krishna Janmashtami Mahamahotsava ki. Go Premanande. All glories to the Desamo devotees. All glories to the Desamo devotees. All glories to the Desamo devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna. Devotees. All right. So, on this very wonderful, most wonderful, auspicious and ecstatic day of Sri Krishna Janmashtami 2020, the anniversary of the divine appearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we will read from Srimad Bhagavatam. We'll be having different classes at different times during the day. So, and finally, at about 11 South African time, then we will we'll have the sort of main or final, at least, class going up till midnight, when we will have the midnight arti, that being the time of the appearance of Lord Sri Krishna around midnight. So now what we'll do, we'll be having class now for an hour, almost an hour, about 50 minutes, something like that. We will read from the beginning of the pastime, and then as our classes happen during the course of the day, then step by step we'll go through the pastime till the actual appearance of the Lord at midnight. So, but now let's read from the beginning of it, from Srimad Bhagavatam. First of all, we'll read Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 1, the advent of Lord Krishna, the introduction, and we will begin with verse 17. Let me just get my hat. Otherwise my head will get cold and I will start sneezing. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Yes, so, Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 1, the advent of Lord Krishna, the introduction, text 17, and then we will read on, we'll read a number of verses and start just going step by step through the pastime. Bhumir dripta nripa vyaja daityani ka shata yutai akranta buribare na brahmanam sharanam yayo. Once, when Mother Earth was overburdened by hundreds of thousands of military phalanxes of various conceited demons dressed like kings, she approached Lord Brahma for relief. Yes. All right. So we're going to read through the story, basically. So let's have a look here. I think we'll just carry on reading the different verses, the verses themselves, and get into the pastime of the appearance rather than going into so much of the purports. But in some cases, of course, we will. Gorbut vashru muki kina krandanti karunam vipo upastitanti ke tasmai vyasanam samovachata. Mother Earth assumed the form of a cow, very much distressed. With tears in her eyes, she appeared before Lord Brahma and told him about her misfortune. Yes. Let me just reposition things slightly here. All right. That's better. So, okay. So, continuing with the description. Brahmatad upadhariyatma sahadevais tayasaha jagama satri nayanas tiram kshira payonide. Thereafter, having heard of the distress of Mother Earth, Lord Brahma, with Mother Earth, Lord Shiva, and all other demigods, approached the shore of the ocean of milk. Let's read the purport by Srila Prabhupada here. After Lord Brahma understood the precarious condition of the earth, he first visited the demigods headed by Lord Indra, who are in charge of the various affairs of this universe, and Lord Shiva, who is responsible for annihilation. Both maintenance and annihilation go on perpetually under the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as stated in Bhagavad Gita chapter 4, verse 8, which I'm sure we'll be reading later on at some point. Paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya cha duskritam. Those who are obedient to the laws of God are protected by different servants and demigods. Whereas those who are undesirable are vanquished by Lord Shiva. Lord Brahma first met all the demigods, including Lord Shiva. Then, along with Mother Earth, they went to the shore of the ocean of milk, where Lord Vishnu lies on a white island, Shweta Dweep. If you could make it a little lighter, this one, it would be nice. If not, we will survive. Right, so now I'll continue on just reading. Now my head's too high. Reading the verses. Yeah. So after reaching the shore of the ocean of milk, the demigods worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, the master of the whole universe, the supreme god of all gods, who provides for everyone and diminishes everyone's suffering. With great attention, they worshipped Lord Vishnu, who lies on the ocean of milk, by reciting the Vedic mantras known as the Purusha Sukta. While in trance, Lord Brahma heard the words of Lord Vishnu vibrating in the sky. Thus he told the demigods, O demigods, hear from me the order of Shiradakshaya Vishnu, the Supreme Person, and execute it attentively without delay. Lord Brahma informed the demigods before we submitted our petition to the Lord, he was already aware of the distress on earth. Consequently, for as long as the Lord moves on earth to diminish its burden by his own potency in the form of time, all of you demigods should appear through plenary portions as sons and grandsons in the family of the Yadus. So this is some interesting background information. The Lord, he says that, first of all, he's already aware, of course he's aware of everything, more aware than we are of our own situations. So, first thing he says, it's interesting that he's already present on earth. He's already present. He's already there. And he's working to reduce the burden which Lord Brahma, Mother Earth, are complaining about. All these demoniac kings just really creating chaos between each other and for the people in general because of their aggressive mentalities. So he's going to diminish that burden, but in the form of time, as he always does. Yes. He always, the demons, they can only last so long, and then they get removed, if nothing else, by the Lord in the form of, in his form as time. You know, oftentimes, they get removed by each other. Yes. One of them takes care of another one. And nobody else has to do anything. But sometimes, none of the others, there's no one around who's capable of dealing with one of the particular demoniac people. But then the Lord does eventually in the form of time. The person just dies somehow or other. It happens. And so the demigods, the Lord is saying, the demigods should appear in the Yadu dynasty as just different personalities, as sons and grandsons in the Yadu family. And then, oh, here it comes, devotees, fasten your seatbelts, here it comes. This is it for the time being. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, who has full potency, will personally appear as the son of Vasudev. Therefore, all the wives of the demigods should also appear in order to satisfy him. Mm-hmm. Yes. So the Lord being there in the form of time, well, that's just sort of normal, you could say. But here now we hear something, you know, really special in terms of the very difficult circumstances that Lord Brahma has been appealing to the Lord on behalf of the demigods about. That Krishna is going to appear, because it's a special situation. It's not just a situation that time will take care of, or the demons amongst themselves will take care of. Some special intervention is required from the Lord himself, and so the Lord just mentions that this is what's going to happen. And then again, the foremost manifestation of Krishna is Sankarshan, who is known as Ananta. He is the origin of all incarnations within this material world. Previous to the appearance of Lord Krishna, this original Sankarshan will appear as Baladev, just to please the Supreme Lord Krishna in his transcendental activities. Yes, prior to the appearance of Krishna. The potency of the Lord known as Vishnu Maya, who is as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, will also appear with Lord Krishna. This potency, acting in different capacities, captivates all the worlds, both material and spiritual. At the request of her master, she will appear with her different potencies in order to execute the work of the Lord. Shukadeva Goswami continued, after thus advising the demigods and pacifying Mother Earth, the very powerful Lord Brahma, who is the master of all other Prajapatis and is therefore known as Prajapati Pati, returned to his own abode, Brahma Loka. So now there's a change in scenario, you could say. Yes, there's a change. We go into now Mathura, which of course is where the Lord did appear in due course. And now we go into not just setting the scene in that the very broad and general way of the demigods praying to the Lord. Now it's, you could say, the build-up to the actual appearance of the Lord in Mathura itself. So we are now in Mathura. Formerly, Shurasena, the chief of the Yadu dynasty, had gone to live in the city of Mathura. There he enjoyed the places known as Mathura and Shurasena. They named the places, well, they named one place after him. Since that time, the city of Mathura had been the capital of all the kings of the Yadu dynasty. The city and district of Mathura are very intimately connected with Krishna, for Lord Krishna lives there eternally. So, just interesting detail, really. This is a verse which is pointed out when there's a discussion about Lord Krishna, his presence in this world. Is it just that he appears every however many thousand or million years or whatever it may be? Or, as Krishna says himself, Vrindavanam parityaja ekapadam na gachati. So, the Lord's saying there that I don't leave parityaja. You remember the word, right? Parityaja. Sarvadharman. Parityaja. Just abandon all varieties of dharma. Famous verse. So the Lord says like this, in fact, Prabhupada actually, right here in the purport, I'm looking at it right now, Prabhupada quotes that very line I just quoted a minute or two ago. Vrindavanam parityaja padam ekam nagachati. Ekapadam padam ekam, same thing. Word order in Sanskrit is not important. It's just the cases. Yeah, so parityaja in Bhagavad Gita is translated as abandon, which is a very sort of what would you say, dramatic form of giving up something or leaving, in this context, leaving. Or in the case of Bhagavad Gita chapter 18, verse 66, putting aside in order to accept something else, parityaja. In the strongest sense, it's like abandon, just, oh, get rid of. So, but here, in this context of this line from this verse, or couple of lines, it may not be quite as dramatic and pronounced. The Lord is saying that he doesn't go or leave Vrindavan even by one step. Even doesn't take one step outside, let alone go away and just really leave. So this verse then, it's 10th Canto, chapter 1, verse 28, is referred to often, when the subject of Krishna and how long he stays, when is he there all the time, when the subject comes up. And this verse, of course, makes the clear statement, and it's Srimad Bhagavatam. What can you say? It's highly authoritative that the city and district of Mathura are very intimately connected with Krishna, for Lord Krishna lives there eternally. And eternally means there's no end, but there's no beginning also. He was there, he is there, he will be there, and he'll just continue to be there. It's just a question, the only sort of variable or consideration, special consideration, is whether people have the eyes to see him there eternally. Other than that, you don't need to worry. He's there. But whether you're able to perceive him, that's another point. Yeah, so the Lord lives there eternally, but still sometimes he appears there in forms which, like Krishna and Balaram, forms, plural, forms which are easily perceivable generally by everybody and anybody, not restricted. Otherwise, when he's not there in that more general physical sense, then he can only be seen by the pure devotees. He can be seen, but only by the pure devotees. Premanjana charita bhakti valochanena santa sadaiva hridayeshu valokayanti. Lord Brahma talks about that in Brahma Samhita. The devotees, they always see Krishna, at least the pure devotees, within their hearts. Let us continue. And I'm going to read the Sanskrit for this verse, because it's a crucial verse in terms of this part of the narration. Ugrasena Sutta Kamsa. Ugrasena Sutta Kamsa. Swasu Priya Chikirshaya. Rashmin Hayanam Jagraha. Rokmai Ratha Shataya Vrita. Kamsa, the son of King Ugrasena, in order to please his sister Devaki on the occasion of her marriage, took charge of the reins of the horses and became the chariot driver. Oh, we skipped a verse, did we? Oh, we did. Anyway, sorry. Let me read verse 29. Some time ago, Vasudev, who belonged to the demigod family or to the Shura dynasty, married Devaki. After the marriage, he mounted his chariot to return home with his newly married wife. Kamsa, the son of Ugrasena, in order to please his sister Devaki on the occasion of her marriage, took charge of the reins of the horses and became the chariot driver. He was surrounded by hundreds of golden chariots. Just for a little clarification, some interesting, you know, considerations, not hugely, well, anyway, just some interesting considerations. Kamsa is not exactly the son of Ugrasena. One demon, I don't know if you remember his name. I can't remember. Begins with D, I think. One demon, Kamsa's wife, whose name mother, Ugrasena's wife, whose name I forget offhand. She's a bit sort of, you know, what to say, a little otherwise. And one day one demon came, assumed the form of Ugrasena, and impregnated her, and Kamsa was born. So it was not actually Ugrasena. It was this demon. And therefore the child, because, you know, Ugrasena is a great devotee. One would certainly expect that the child would be a devotee. But the child was Kamsa, who's, you know, quite the opposite. But still, you know, in terms of social conventions and how they were living, Ugrasena sort of treated Kamsa like his son. So he's referred to as the son, Ugrasena Sutta. Ugrasena Sutta Kamsa. And then Devaki is not exactly his sister, Swasu, his own sister. Devaki is his cousin sister. But, you know, according to the social conventions, cousin brothers, cousin sisters, they just referred to as brothers and sisters. I don't know, does it still happen in Indian society here? No? Well, in India, I'm sure. Yeah, okay. So she's the sister, he's the brother. Yeah. Devaki's father, King Devika, was very much affectionate to his daughter. Therefore, while she and her husband were leaving home, he gave her a dowry of 400 elephants, nicely decorated with golden garlands. He also gave 10,000 horses, 1,800 chariots, and 200 very beautiful young maidservants, fully decorated with ornaments. O beloved son, Maharaj Parikshit, when the bride and bridegroom were ready to start, conch shells, bugles, drums, and kettle drums all vibrated in concert for their auspicious departure. Yes. While Kamsa, controlling the reins of the horses, was driving the chariot along the way, an unembodied voice addressed him. You foolish rascal, the eighth child of the woman you are carrying will kill you. Wow. The word is Abuddha. 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 That's foolish rascal. Abuddha. All right. Kamsa was a condemned personality in the Bhoja dynasty because he was envious and sinful. Therefore, upon hearing this omen from the sky, he caught hold of his sister's hair with his left hand and took up his sword with his right hand to sever her head from her body. Hare Krishna. Sure. On the spot. What a change of mood. Sure. Yes. Wanting to pacify Kamsa, who was so cruel and envious that he was shamelessly ready to kill his sister, the great soul Vasudev, who was to be the father of Krishna, spoke to him in the following words. Okay. Vasudev said, "My dear brother-in-law Kamsa, you are the pride of your family, the Bhoja dynasty, and great heroes praise your qualities. How could such a qualified person as you kill a woman, your own sister, especially on the occasion of her marriage?" Or, you know, you could say, especially on any occasion, really. It's so incredibly extreme. But, you know, we can note here that how Vasudev is dealing with this situation. Vasudev is also a Kshatriya. He's not a Brahmin. He's not a Vaishya. He is a Kshatriya. But, and Kamsa is a Kshatriya. But Vasudev is a different type of Kshatriya to Kamsa. Kamsa is one of the big warrior Kshatriyas. Vasudev is a minister Kshatriya. Yeah. He was an advisor. He's still a Kshatriya. He's not a Brahmin. Brahmins would also be advisors. So he was a Kshatriya. But he was an advisor. And of course, when one's wife, like we read a few days ago in Bhagavad Gita, one of the six types of aggressors is someone who tries to, what to speak of kill, but just kidnap your wife. If someone tries to kill your wife, then that person is an aggressor, and the type of aggressor who should be killed, or even must be killed, it's something like that. Yes. So, in other words, Vasudev, arguably, in this situation right here, Vasudev is in a situation where he should now try to kill Kamsa. Yeah. He definitely has to defend his wife. There's just no question of anything else at all. She's in deadly danger. However, Vasudev being highly intelligent as a minister, highly intelligent, he knows, it's just, you know, literally painfully obvious, that if I do my duty of trying to protect my wife here by physically attacking Kamsa, then there is no doubt, it is a foregone conclusion, I will be killed. And so sort of you could say, I mean, to go down very nobly defending your wife and just, you know, being a hero sort of thing, it's all very nice. But why? Why waste? Why waste your life if there are other ways of doing it which may actually be effective? And in this case, because Vasudeva is, you know, a trained and experienced minister and negotiator and, you know, expert at speaking to people and sorting situations out, all that sort of thing. So then Vasudeva sees that what we need to do here, we need to do a negotiation and see. And with someone like Kamsa, who's such a rascal, he's a Buddha, as we read. He's a Buddha. He's a foolish demon. But foolish. He doesn't have a finer intelligence. How to begin speaking to him? What would you suggest? Flatter him. Flatter him. Even though your wife is just about to be decapitated, say, my dear brother-in-law. Yes. And even though Kamsa is just rotten, you are the pride of your family. He's amazing, actually. He's just, it's like heavy negotiation. It's powerful negotiation. How could such a qualified person as you? Whoa. Yes. Kill a woman. Easy for Kamsa. No problem. If the woman is some danger to him, forget it. Don't even think about it. So this is Vasudeva's approach. And it's, you know, on one hand, it's very interesting. On the other hand, it's just highly, it's like brilliant negotiation, dealing with an extremely difficult person in an extremely difficult situation. Oh, great hero! Wait a minute, have I skipped verses? No, I haven't. All right. Oh, great hero! One who takes birth is sure to die, for death is born with the body. One may die today or after hundreds of years, but death is sure for every living entity. He's trying to elevate the whole situation. But Kamsa is a very difficult person to elevate, particularly at the best of times, particularly in this sort of situation, which is like the worst of times. So anyway, he goes on. Vasudeva goes on negotiating in those types of terms. But initially, Kamsa does not get it. He fails. Vasudeva fails to convince Kamsa, and Kamsa's still ready to kill Devaki. Anyway, let's just read a little bit further. I've skipped a verse. Just as a person traveling on the road rests one foot on the ground and then lifts the other, or as a worm on a vegetable transfers itself to one leaf and then gives up the previous one, the conditioned soul takes shelter of another body and then gives up the one he had before. That's an interesting point, isn't it? Not that he, like, literally enters the next body before the previous one dies. It's not exactly that sense. But the next one is already established, and it's ready to be entered. yeah, to begin that next program before the previous one dies. Having experienced the situation by seeing or hearing about it, one contemplates and speculates about that situation, and thus one surrenders to it, not considering his present body. Similarly, by mental adjustments, one dreams at night of living under different circumstances in different bodies and forgets his actual position. Under the same process, one gives up his present body and accepts another. Okay. At the time of death, according to the thinking, feeling, and willing of the mind, which is involved in fruitive activities, one receives a particular body. In other words, the body develops according to the activities of the mind. Changes of body are due to the flickering of the mind, for otherwise the soul would remain in its original spiritual body. I'm not reading all of these verses. Okay, now here's a crucial verse. Having given these arguments, now Vasudev tries to bring it all to a conclusion. The conclusion being that, all right, don't kill her. That's what he wants to do now. Let's see how he does. So now this is, he's concluding his arguments. Therefore, since envious, impious activities cause a body in which one suffers in the next life, why should one act impiously? That's verse 44, by the way. Considering one's welfare, one should not envy anyone, for an envious person must always fear harm from his enemies, either in this life or the next. Yeah, so this is the argument. If you kill her, you're going to create a far worse situation than you've got right now. So don't kill her. You'll become like your own worst enemy if you kill her. Yeah, so don't kill her. You think you're solving a problem, you'll be making your problems bigger. As your younger sister, this poor girl Devaki is like your own daughter and deserves to be affectionately maintained. You are merciful, Haribol, and therefore you should not kill her. Indeed, she deserves your affection. Shukadeva Goswami continued, O best of the Kuru dynasty, Kamsa was fiercely cruel and was actually a follower of the Rakshasas. Therefore, he could be neither pacified nor terrified by the good instructions given by Vasudeva. He did not care about the results of sinful activities, either in this life or in the next. Yes. So Vasudev now, he can see that I've tried, but it has not worked. So what to do next? I can't, I've got to do something, change the strategy to some degree. So he thought, the next verse says, he thought to himself very deeply. Considering the imminent danger of death, he thought of another plan to stop Kamsa. And here's an interesting verse. It's verse 48. As long as he has intelligence and bodily strength, an intelligent person must try to avoid death. This is the duty of every embodied person. But if death cannot be avoided in spite of one's endeavors, a person facing death commits no offense. Isn't that interesting? If you don't defend yourself from death when you're able, but if you just say, yeah, just kill me, or something like that, then, according to this verse here, and this is Shukadev Goswami, he's saying it's an offense. It's an offense. Because you're not looking after the property of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Means your body. Your body. So Vasudev considered, by delivering all my sons to Tecumseh, who is death personified, I shall save the life of Devaki. Perhaps Tecumseh will die before my sons take birth. Or, since he's already destined to die at the hands of my son, one of my sons may kill him. For the time being, let me promise to hand over my sons so that Tecumseh will give up this immediate threat. And if in due course of time Tecumseh dies, I shall have nothing to fear. So this is his strategy. From making some appeal to the intelligence that don't do this because you will be simply making your life worse. Therefore, you must not do this just for your own sake. Seeing that didn't work, now, you know, it's quite a different strategy. So I'll move on now to verse, which verse? 52. After thus considering the matter as far as his knowledge would allow, Vasudev submitted his proposal to the sinful Tecumseh with great respect. Vasudev's mind was full of anxiety because his wife was facing danger. But in order to please the cruel, shameless, and sinful Tecumseh, he externally smiled and spoke to him as follows. Now, Tecumseh can't be so tuned in. You know, if someone's smiling at you in a situation like this, something's going on there. Vasudev said, O best of the sober, you have nothing to fear from your sister Devaki because of what you've heard from the unseen omen. The cause of death will be her sons. Therefore I promise that when she gives birth to the sons from whom your fear has arisen, I shall deliver them all unto your hands. So, Shukadev Goswami continued, Tecumseh agreed to the logical arguments of Vasudev, and having full faith in Vasudev's words, he refrained from killing his sister. Vasudev, being pleased with Tecumseh, pacified him further and entered his own house. Yeah, so that's sort of the beginning there, isn't it? So, an interesting point, and let's just read the purport here, which addresses this point. Although Tecumseh was a sinful demon, he believed that Vasudev would never deviate from his word. The character of a pure devotee like Vasudev is such that even so great a demon as Tecumseh firmly believed in his words and was satisfied. Yas yasti bhaktir bhagavatya kinchana sarvarganais tatra samasate sura. All good attributes are present in a devotee, so much so that even Tecumseh believed in Vasudev's words without a doubt. Well, yes, that's amazing. course, they knew each other. They knew each other for some time. And so Kamsa knew. Kamsa had experience of Vasudeva keeping his word. So then what happens is every year a child is born, and the child is handed over to Kamsa. So, okay. But now, so to the first child. Vasudeva was very much disturbed by fear of becoming a liar by breaking his promise. Thus, with great pain, he delivered his firstborn son, named Kirtiman, into the hands of Kamsa. And here's an interesting verse we'll read. It's verse 58, is it? Yeah, 58. Sure, it's quite a verse. What is painful? What is painful for saintly persons who strictly adhere to the truth? How could there not be independence for pure devotees who know the Supreme Lord as the substance? What deeds are forbidden for persons of the lowest character? And what cannot be given up for the sake of Lord Krishna by those who have fully surrendered at his lotus feet? So all these kind of extreme types of situations and these extraordinary personalities, and how they relate with these such very unusual situations. That for a saintly person who's, for whom the truth is just the essence of his life, to maintain, to uphold the truth, even if it means yourself suffering, then there's no pain. That's what they're saying. What is painful? Just does it. And he doesn't calculate, well, maybe I should say something else. He accepts. Because for him, not maintaining the truth, being dishonest, would be more painful even than dying. And then you've got the devotees who are independent, that whatever goes on, they don't happen. They don't worry. By its rising and setting, the sun reduces the lifespan of everyone except the devotees. They're on the eternal platform. And then what can a rotten person like Kamsa or one of his followers, what is he unable to do if it appears to be for his benefit to do it? There's nothing he's unable to do. Completely nothing. Just nothing he's unable to do if it's going to bring benefit to him. So that's the situation, devotees. That's the situation. And the story will continue later on. Wait. I'm trying to stop. Anyway. So... Oh, well, okay. I mean, we can just finish. It's okay. We're ready. All right, devotees. So for the time being, we'll conclude here. It's, you know, a reasonable place to conclude. So thank you very much. Let us now have darshan of Shishi Radha Radhanath in their new outfit. Hey, you can lift up the grill, the gate, and we're going to position the